Support for KNKX comes from Portage Bay Cafe, offering local, organic, and sustainable food in South Lake Union, Ballard, Roosevelt near the UW, and on 65th, featuring a new lunch menu, including an organic heirloom tomato and fresh catch salad. Now taking reservations online at portagebaycafe.com.
Live in our studios today is bandleader Donnie McCaslin on sax and Nate Wood on bass. The McCaslin Group has received a lot of attention recently, collecting 5 Grammy Awards for the late David Bowie for their album Together, last year's Black Star. Going back to the late 80s, Donnie's worked with Gary Burton, Danilo Perez, the Maria Schneider Orchestra, appearing with all those groups at Jazz Alley, as a matter of fact, over the last few years. His current group is one of the hottest in jazz today. Their latest album, Beyond Now, is dedicated to and inspired by David Bowie. And I couldn't be more excited to present this exclusive duo performance live on 88.5 today. Please help me welcome Donnie McCaslin and Nate Wood.
Thank you.
Donnie McCaslin on the saxophone with the multi-instrumentalist Nate Wood playing bass. You may know him as the drummer with Kneebody. He's also composer and singer-songwriter. We're glad to have Nate here with Donnie. Great to have you here, Mr. McCaslin. Let's get to know the saxophone player for folks who don't. You grew up in California, down in Santa Cruz area, I think it was, and you're in a jazz family. Your dad was a jazz musician. Did you know right away that you were going to be a pro?
Well, yeah, I didn't start playing until I was about 12 years old, and I was in junior high school, and I was in a photography class, and I wasn't engaging in the class for some reason, and it was like the last day that you could transfer, and my best friend from elementary school was in beginning orchestra, so I just transferred to that class and told my father, and he asked me what instrument I wanted to play, and I said tenor saxophone, and that's how it started. I mean, prior to that, my parents were divorced, you know, and I would see my father once a week, but he would pick me up and take me downtown to downtown Santa Cruz. And he had a gig playing at this outdoor cafe right on the Pacific Garden Mall. Mm. So when I was quite young, I just would sit in a chair and just listen to them play for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And I guess my father had asked on occasion if I wanted to start playing, and I always, you know, turned it down. I was more interested in basketball, you know, and stuff. But you know, eventually, yeah, when I was 12, I just made this impulsive decision. And I think part of it was the guy who played saxophone with my father's band when I was young, was a very charismatic player. Wild, he played these wild solos, be squeaking and honking, and people walking on the mall. Sometimes it was this very festive atmosphere. You know, this was like, late 70s, early 80s. So the hippie culture, very strong, and, you know, people dancing and carrying on. I mean, it was a very, you know, colorful environment. So I think it was that, you know, seeing. This guy, Wesley Braxton, played with my father, and so I made the decision then. And once I started, I think it did pretty quickly become clear that this is what I wanted to do. You know, I started working, practicing pretty regularly and just putting a lot of my feeling into music. You know, it was a way for me to process the emotions that were going on. And so I was in all the way pretty soon.
You got pretty good when you were young. You formed your own band, and they asked you to come out and study at Berklee College of Music in Boston, where you met a guy who's been a mentor to a lot of musicians, Gary Burton. You ended up working with Gary, and I wonder how that educational experience shaped you.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, when I first started working with him, he put together a student group to do a jazz cruise, which was pretty cool, because on this cruise, you know, it was just so many of the you know, Phil Woods and, you know, Betty Carter and Lionel Hampton and, you know, just all these like legends, you know. And So that was a pretty thrilling experience. And as maybe midway through my senior year when I, you know, got the gig, so to speak. And yeah, it was great because Gary is really smart and really articulate and would just sort of break down, you know, the music industry and what's it like to tour. And is it, but, you know, you just get this, you know, really close insight to somebody who's really proficient at not only, you know, being a great musician, it goes without saying, right? But then also just how it, what it's like on the road and how to deal with all the things that come up. And she was talking about, you know, we talk about politics and, you know, food and, I mean, everything. I mean, I came from Santa Cruz, you know, didn't travel much as a kid. We didn't have a lot of means. So this was all really new to me, you know, going to these five-star restaurants in Europe, like, it, you know, at 21 or something. It was just sort of, you know, mind-blowing to me. But so it was like going to graduate school, really, and it was just a wonderful experience. And he was really articulate about things about the music, you know, and what he thought I should work on or think about. And so it was I was lucky to have one of those sort of mentor relationships coming out of college.
Now, when I was talking to my jazz friends around town about Donnie McCaslin's coming in, a lot of them weren't talking about the David Bowie record. They were talking about your work with Maria Schneider and her orchestra. And you've played with her for a number of years, and I wonder what that experience is like. A big band, lots of compositional material to work
with. Well, it's been a tremendous experience. And in fact, before coming to Seattle, I was just with her for a week in Tokyo. I played a week at the Blue Note there, and you know, she's a tremendous musician, and I've learned a lot from her. I think part of it for me, it's musically speaking, you know, I feel like she's influenced by Gil Evans and Bob Brookmeyer. And so part of the thing is just when I'm playing in that group, hearing my part and how it relates to other people in the band and how it relates to the overall landscape that she's created. It's so rich. Her, you know, her orchestration skills are so deep, and to be in the middle of that and playing it and kind of just observing and learning from it has been wonderful, and kind of observing the importance of every note and every line, because I think that's something that she's a master at, is making every line in that group feel like a melody. So I'm on the fourth woodwind part, right? I'm not the lead guy, so usually that can be kind of an obtuse you know, line that you're playing. But with her writing is, there's always direction. There's this deep sense of melody. So I really appreciate that. And then, you know, she creates these really lush environments to improvise in. And I guess an analogy I think about is like what it must have felt like for Miles Davis playing in front of Gil Evans, writing on those Miles Ahead, Porgy and Bess, you know, on those records that are iconic records. Sometimes it feels like that for me, to be standing in front of that band with that kind of writing and those backgrounds behind me as I improvise. I mean, it's very inspiring. And then she's just also been a great friend. You know, I mean, I'm really inspired by her work ethic. You know, she's somebody who just doesn't let any detail go on, you know, I'm forgetting how to express this coherently, but you know, she just leaves no stone unturned when she's writing, when she's working, and that attention to detail really, really comes through. I think when in the final product, you know, so many of her songs, now that I've been in the group for years, you know, you get the first draft and she goes, you know, and records it, she revises it. Then we have a gig 3 weeks later, she's got a second draft. We work on, you know, and then there's a third draft. And she just keeps working at these pieces till she gets them just as she's conceiving them. And I appreciate that. And I've learned a lot from that, because sometimes there's some obsession that goes with that I think probably all artists have. And there's also it just that patience to hang in there until you have all the details sorted just the right way.
Donnie McCaslin's here with Nate Wood on bass. We're going to talk a little bit about the way you put together Black Star with David Bowie after we hear from the duet here live on 88.5. And we're going to hear a tune from Black Star next, yes?
Yeah, this is, we're going to play an instrumental version of a great song of David's called Lazarus.
Donnie McCaslin, Nate Wood, live on 88.5. Thank you.
Thank you.
Donnie McCaslin on saxophone with Nate Wood at the bass. Donnie, before we talk about Black Star, I wanted to get into a little bit of the musical transition you've made over recent years into more electronic music, kind of focused jazz. And how did you get involved with that music?
Well, I mean, at the very beginning, it was a conversation between David Binney, who's produced most of my records. He's a great saxophone player and composer. We've been friends for many years. So we were just meeting to talk about what comes next, you know, and we just done a record that was based around kind of a brass quintet with an acoustic group, you know, of mine. It's called Declaration, and he suggested do an electric record. And I thought about it. I think I'd thought about it before, and I said, you know, I'm going to do it. And that ended up being a record called Perpetual Motion, and a lot of that was really inspired by things from my childhood, like Paul Jackson, who lived in Santa Cruz when I was a teenager, the bass player from the Headhunters. You know, I was thinking about that experience, Tower of Power, you know, which is such an iconic group in the Bay Area that I saw as a kid and loved so much. And Cannonball Adderley, Mercy, 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 Donnie Hathaway, Led Zeppelin, things like that were kind of the inspiration for that record. And once I started touring with that, with Tim LaFave, and then Mark started playing drums, and I started getting more interested in electronica music, and Dave was sending me things to listen to, and talking with the guys about what they listened to, it got more and more interesting to me, and I just felt like the sonic landscape captured my imagination, and there's so much room there, and there's all this rhythmic activity. There was just something about it that just seemed really compelling to me. And so since that point, I've just been, you know, I've been listening to a lot of it and trying to, well, I've just been finding my way, you know, in that zone. I think the way I describe it is it's like, you know, the exploration of the intersection of improvisation and electronica music.
Right.
And it's been a lot of fun. And you know, through my career, it's usually like I do one project, like a trio record, and then I do a record with brass, and, you know, I kind of move around from, but this, I've just kind of stuck with this for some records now, and it's just, I'm just having so much fun, and it's put me outside of my comfort zone initially, which is a good thing, you know, and challenged me to come up with language on the instrument that felt honest and appropriate for that environment. So it's just been tremendous. And the, you know, the guys, I mean, Nate's been really involved. He mixed the records, mastered the records, played guitar, and he's, you know, on these tours playing bass, playing drums. I mean, the chance to work with guys like this is just wonderful, and it just really enriched my musical life as well. So it's been really fun.
It was that kind of music, I think, that may have led to your work with Maria Schneider on a David Bowie tune that led her to say, hey, David, you should come and check out the band at this tiny little club in Greenwich Village, 55 Club. Yeah. And so you're playing in this little club with your band, and you know David Bowie's coming, and he shows up, and he's sitting there in front of you. What was that night like?
Well, I would say, you know, I was a little nervous because at that point I knew that Maria had recommended me to him on multiple occasions and had said that he should do something with me and all that. So I knew that something was in the air. At the same time, that particular gig was our warm-up gig for a recording that was going to be Fast Future. So there was a lot, you know, a lot writing musically on the gig. And in fact, I don't think I told half the guys that David was coming because I didn't want, you know what I mean?
Right,
I just want to keep it in wraps. So, so I saw them out of the corner of my eye, and then I just tried to think about the music because for me, thinking about other stuff just kind of gets in the way. And then they were gone. You know, the set was over. It's a really intimate space, as you mentioned. So the set was over, they were gone. And it was about a week later that I met him in person the first time, and we talked and went from there.
I can just imagine the band after the gig saying, that guy looked just like David
Bowie. Well, no, there was like the wait staff was like, there was a guy that looked like, was that David? You know, there was a lot of, I don't know.
Now, making the Black Star record, you were talking about how Maria Schneider was so exacting in, you know, a first draft and a second draft and a third draft. Was that similar to the way you went about making Black Star? Or was it more kind of free-flowing and wild?
It was different. It was different. It was because I would say it was different because David sent me the demos to the song. I sent them to the band. And then we got together once before we started recording, just the four of us, just to play and make sure that we were clear on everything. Mm-hmm. And we were. So his process in the studio, like we would come in and we would listen to the demo and then we'd just go out and start playing. We like rehearse it, you know, once and then we'd start recording. And he was, you know, singing and playing guitar with us. And it was usually first or second take. Mm. For the songs. It was really quick, actually. And once we had the master take, let's say, in place, then, you know, if there needed to be any drum or guitar or bass fixes, that would happen right away. Then maybe David would go in and layer different vocal parts, all of which he did by ear, by the way, all of which he did with, like, no vocal warm-up. It was amazing. And then I had, like, you know, my woodwind collection. So I had alto flute and flute and clarinet and soprano, and I had tenor, and I'd written, you know, I'd orchestrated the stuff for kind of a woodwind section. So I would go in and lay down, you know, X amount of tracks. Jason had 9 keyboards, you know, so that what we did, and then we would do that and we move on to the next song. So I think David's process of going through with a fine tooth comb came after we did the basic tracking of Black Star. Then I think him and Tony Visconti went through and just, you know, every track and every note and really, because my sense was we would record during the day. Then after our recording sessions, he would often go see a friend of ours, Henry Hay, who's the musical director of Lazarus, the off-Broadway play. So they would work on Lazarus. And then I think he would go home and he would listen to what we'd recorded that day. So he was able to process a lot of information. You know, it's amazing to me. I can't come one thing at a time. Yeah. So kind of person. So it was really impressive. And then that continued once we finished the basic tracks. You know, they I think spent quite a lot of time, you know, refining things and adding things here and there. And again, I think that was one of the things that was astonishing to me when I heard Black Star in its entirety for the first time after they had mixed it and mastered it, was like, there's so much detail in it and you hear everything. And, you know, they added some voices, added some synth stuff, some string patches and stuff, and it's just all there and you hear it. And it's, they did a great job, you know, putting it together. I have to say, I thought it was really, really amazing.
I heard that there was a non-disclosure agreement you had to sign. Was that something you really couldn't talk about with people?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So you couldn't talk to the family about it or your friends? And
no.
Did you know for sure that he was going to use your music, or was it just kind of, well, we're going to give it a shot and see what he says?
I mean, my feeling about that is you just never know. I mean, how many times do you hear about folks who've recorded on records and then the records never come out, you know? So I didn't really want to think about what could happen or what would happen or put my eggs in any basket. Cause I felt like it was an amazing experience. I hope it comes out cause I think it's amazing material, but it's out of my hands, you know? So once we had finished, of course I was thinking about it but I also moved on as we do, you know, we work sometimes in so many different situations in music, you know, learning music for different gigs that, you know, I just moved on to working on Beyond Now, my record, and then working with Maria and other things. So I was thinking about it, but I didn't, you know, rest in anything. I just waited to hear from them about what they were going to do with it. So I was, you know, really happy to hear it was going to come out as a record.
Yeah, Beyond Now is the latest from the Donny McCaslin Group, dedicated to and inspired by David Bowie. And that seems to be like what you're touring around, but you're also moving on musically and writing new stuff?
Yeah. I've been it's been really fun. We've had a lot of opportunities to play, and I've been able to, you know, find songs of David's that I really love and that are meaningful to me. We've been playing some of those. And then, yeah, I've been working on new material for this next project I have in mind. So we've been developing some of those tunes. I have a whole new batch to kind of, you know, assault the guys with. But it's been, you know, it's wonderful. This is the kind of thing that you dream about when you're young and you're practicing and you read about how jazz was when, you know, Miles Davis's group would play a month in San Francisco, 3 weeks in Los Angeles, you know, and just that, the volume of their work, there's just no comparison to, you know, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
And of course it's a much different environment now. But for me, you know, last couple of years, it's the most I've ever worked as a band leader. And it's just been tremendous. Just having the opportunities to play this music, to develop it, you know, it is kind of it's like a dream come true, you know, it's just so much fun to realize this music on a consistent basis.
Donnie McCaslin Group is at Jazz Alley tonight. Beyond Now is their latest. They'll be back in the Northwest for the Vancouver and Victoria, BC Jazz Festivals 24th and 25th. And Nate Wood is here on bass in a duet. I would love to hear one of the new songs, Donnie.
Absolutely. This is a new tune, no title yet. I'm open to suggestions. And here we go. Thank you.